The Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle Show contains explicit language and is intended for mature audiences only. But just because you're mature doesn't mean you can't be a little naughty.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is your WWE Night of Champions 2023 recap and review, and we'll probably mix in a little bit of NXT Battleground as well. I am Don Tony. Joining along with me again is the returning
Kev Castle. What's going on, Ant?
No, not much. Not much. Overloaded on pro wrestling the last four days. From Impact Wrestling all the way up to AEW, and we're recording this right after NXT, and a little bit of a letdown tonight. Blair Davenport being the mystery person, which we kind of all had a feeling, but we were hoping it would be Mandy Rose. Can't be Alexa Bliss because we found out today she is pregnant. But
So
she's going to be out until 2024 at minimum. She's not due to have her child until December. So congratulations, Alexa Bliss. Somebody's getting laid out there. So.
Somebody's going to do it.
Yeah. Well, we're here to talk about NXT Battleground a little bit. Primarily WWE Night of Champions, which took place in Saudi Arabia. And, I got to tell you, the entire predictions that we have been doing, even going back to the draft, when we were talking about free agents of Baron Corbin and Mustafa Ali, we talked about, they're probably going to show up in NXT, give a little bit back. And tonight on NXT, we had Ali make an appearance. He's probably going to go after Wesley and Baron Corbin going after Carmelo Hayes, mixing it up a little bit. I kind of like it, but, can we all agree? I mean, it might sound a little offensive, but can we all agree that if WWE Night of Champions didn't take place in Saudi Arabia, Mustafa Ali probably would not have been Gunther's opponent?
No, he definitely wouldn't have been. And we talked about how, a million times other people remind us he's not from Saudi, and it didn't matter because he has a connection to them and a similarity that made him relatable to people in Saudi. And as he said, these kids are just like me. They look like me. They have the same skin color as me. Yes, there's a connection. He's not Saudi, but that doesn't matter. Just like, certain other people. We talked about people going to Puerto Rico who are from Mexico. They have a Latin heritage that is a connection. So, it's so silly that people kept saying that he's not from there. It doesn't matter, he put on a nice little battle, but we knew Gunther would win. And I like Ali in NXT DT. I like the way, and it seemed the fans were very receptive to him. So maybe that's where he belongs for now. Listen, it reinvigorated Mandy Rose, sent her packing to do videos for a living. But, let's hope Mustafa Ali doesn't like the way he looks naked in the mirror and quotes the pictures. So him and Corbin going down there, I think, listen, where everyone was kind of saying, next bus flip, both of them are going to be out of here. Well, it looks like maybe not. And they'll be in NXT and reinvigorate their careers.
Yeah, and let's not take away the fact that Gunther and Mustafa Ali had a banger of a match in Saudi Arabia. Even when you talk about Puerto Rico, Zelina Vega would not have been Rhea Ripley's likely opponent if it wasn't in Puerto Rico either. But the matches did what they were their purpose was. And when it comes to Rhea Ripley especially, she is dominating. They keep teasing her. Even though you and I have said it for ages and people realize it now, they're not doing intergender matches anytime soon, but they'll always have Rhea Ripley get in the face of a guy. and she is the dominant one right now. She is the one that if you spend more than 5 minutes in the ring with her, then you have to be the elite of the elite as far as women's wrestling goes. She beat Zelina Vega in a very short amount of time. And Natalya, for some reason, yeah, because it was her birthday, it's like, oh, how could you do that to her on her birthday? Natalya's had a storied career. And should she have even been the opponent for Rhea Ripley? I mean, let me put it like this. You see people online, you know, with the Money in the Bank ladder matches that have started, the qualifying matches, and there was rumors that Dominic Mysterio may be in one of these qualifying matches, and people are like, oh, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, he can't be in that. He only people who should be world champions. Does Natalya, right now, in the stage of her career, is she the number one ideal choice to be going up against Rhea Ripley for the women's championship? You know, you look at logic. Natty at the tail end of her career, Rhea Ripley being portrayed as one of the most dominant people on the roster, and we're supposed to think that they should have had a 5 or a 10 minute match?
No, and also Natty's, you can also imagine that maybe they just went up to Natty and go, listen, you want to go to Saudi Arabia, it's going to be a squash, but you're going to help put Rhea over. And, you know, we talked about on the last time we got together, DT, last week, that, you know, perhaps Natty's career is winding down. She's on the cusp of 40, if she's not already 40. And it's not that you can't wrestle after 40. There's no rule about it. But she's been here 15 years, and I think her, just like her husband, I think her calling post-ring is in the back. Yes. As an agent, an ambassador. Natty would be a great ambassador on the road for WWE. And I think her career is, as Sting would say, the ship's coming into shore. It's on the beach. And I think that's just it for her. And it's not an ageism thing. It's that Natty has been here a long time, and eventually you have to transfer to another position. And I think same for Dolph Ziggler. And I think they both will have jobs in this company. And I'm thinking Natty was approached with, listen, go, you want to go to Saudi Arabia, Russell Rhea Ripley? Yeah, but listen, you got to put her over in like a minute. So I can picture Natty just saying, you know what? Okay, that's where I'm at this point in my career. That's where I'm at. And yeah, I'll help put over Rhea, who's, you know, 15 years younger than me. So yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. I think Natty's just a good company woman, don't you?
She's a great ambassador for WWE. Yes. And she knows the game, and she knows, you know, not to use a phrase, but she knows the game, and she knows how to play it.
Yeah,
You know, the thing is that, first of all, this match wasn't even supposed to take place in Saudi Arabia. It was supposed to be Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey versus Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, but Liv Morgan got injured, so this was a last minute. Plus, I have said this to some people online over the last couple of days. You know, you tell me who Rhea Ripley should have faced instead. That would have been a 2 week build up as far as a feud goes. You tell me who on the Raw women's roster right now you would have had instead. And the only name that anybody kept bringing up was Candice LeRae. And I'm saying, like, Candice LeRae, as far as the overall scope of things with the WWE Universe, she is even further down on the food chain. You know, so who would you have built for 2 weeks and then move on? There isn't anybody. There is nobody. You even Shotzi, which people still haven't figured it out, Shotzi Blackheart is a SmackDown star.
Yeah.
You know, nobody thought about that. Shotzi is SmackDown. But she teamed up with Raquel Rodriguez, and you know, but the point is that I don't think Natty complained. I think Natty is one of the, you know, the most loyal people of the company. And Natty at this stage in her career, she doesn't lose any credibility by losing the Rhea Ripley. I mean, you know, I hate to use this as a comparison. Do you remember when The Undertaker took on Jimmy Snuka at WrestleMania?
Sure.
All right. Undertaker squashed him in about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And did you go to school the next day or whatever day it was, and you were like, the fuck are they doing to Jimmy Snuka? How could they have him get squashed in 2 minutes? No, you were like, wow, The Undertaker's fucking cool, man. Oh, you know, like, even though...
Well, what me and my brother did was like, wow, 10 years ago, Snuka was on top at MSG, and now he's... you know, jobbing to Taker. But we also knew that Snuka was older at that point. Yeah. I think Snuka was in his mid-50s at that point, or in early 50s.
He's got, I would say probably around, you know what?
About 50. Right. Yeah, about 50.
Yeah. I mean, it, maybe someone could check what year did The Undertaker face Snuka. Was that 1990? I don't know if there was, it was right around 90. So if he, in 85, well, wait a minute. Let's see. Snuka, let's see. Now I'm just a little bit curious. Let's see. Jimmy Snuka, when he died, he was 74. Okay. He was born in 1943. So if that match took place in 90, he would have been 47 years old.
Oh, wow. So close to 50. Yeah.
So, okay. and Natty right now, is her age is 41.
Okay.
So she, you know, I just think like this uproar, like, oh, Natty on a birthday, they make her lose in a minute, this and that, and Zelina Vega should have won the championship, and give me a reason why Mustafa Ali shouldn't have won the championship. Like, why would you fuck up Gunther, who is the future? Why would you fuck up Rhea Ripley, who is the future? You know, simply because of that momentary, like, burst of love, energy, smiling, crying.
They should be the same fans who was like back in the day with the Yankees. Take out Mariano and put in the other pitcher. It's his birthday today. It's his birthday. Come on, Mariano. It's his birthday.
It's almost like a form of an orgasm. Like, give me that split second emotional feeling. I need that high. I feel like I got a harp, play with a harp on a cloud. Like, oh, everything is right in the world. And then 2 days later when it's on Raw, you're like, you know what it's like? Kev, I just figured it out. You know what it's like? It's like going to a bar. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're pissed drunk, and everything in there looks sexy. Even a fat 300-pound, whatever you want to call it. So what happens? Because you just want to have that feel-good moment, you go with the 350-pound horse. And then 2 days later, at 9 p.m. at night on the USA Network, you're no longer drunk, and there's no more hangover, and you look next to you, and you got this hippopotamus laying next to you, like, the fuck did I do? That's the feeling you would have had if Natty would have been champion 2 days later after beating Rhea Ripley in Saudi Arabia. That's how you would have felt if Mustafa Ali would have had the championship 2 days after Gunther lost it to him. People would have been like, the fuck you take it off of Gunther for? Why would you fuck up his run? He's had one of the legendary runs of all time, and you have him lose it because of Saudi Arabia and Mustafa Ali?
Or birthday, yeah. No, yeah, you can't. That's like people, you should thank God those people are not in charge of anything. Those are really hasty, ridiculous decisions that'll ruin everything in the end for that one pop. Because everyone's like, imagine the pop Mustafa Ali would have gotten Saudi Arabia. Yeah, and as you used to say, DT, then the next day, then what? Yes. Then what? Then that's all over. Okay, it's a memory, and now what do we do?
Yeah, exactly.
Mustafa goes back to the mainstream crowd, gets a bullshit reaction, and now we just ruined Gunther's career. Yep. I mean, what? That's so ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, we would definitely have to talk about Seth Rollins becoming the world heavyweight champion.
Of course.
Yeah. I still, now I know, you know, you know, Seth Rollins is not high in your list, and believe me, there are many people that just aren't into Rollins, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I still look back with amusement those that thought that WWE seriously considering putting it on AJ Styles because Seth Rollins may do more movies in the future. Seth Rollins did defeat AJ Styles to become the world heavyweight champion. Now, putting Seth Rollins, the character, aside for a minute, because I know, you know, you and quite a few people that you know, follow the shows are not the biggest Rollins fans, but I got to word it like this. You know, this is a brand new championship, and Seth Rollins fought in a tournament to become the leader of Monday Night Raw. You and I, right before the show went live, we were having a little bit of a conversation about Roman Reigns and his title reign. And, you know, when you examine it a little bit closer, it is very, very old school. It is very old school, almost like a Hogan reign or a Savage, Macho Man Randy Savage reign. It's not on the level of Brock Lesnar 2017. But is it safe to say, Kev, that one of the ways that you help put prestige behind this championship, one of the ways that you put credibility in this championship, is you follow a template similar to Gunther? You right. put it behind someone who claims to have a lot of love for the world of professional wrestling, a lot of respect for the world of professional wrestling, wants to leave pro wrestling in a better place than where he left it. You know, doesn't, you know, Gunther doesn't say it as eloquent as Seth Rollins or vice versa, but, you know, this one of the ways to put credence in his title is to have Rollins follow the Gunther template. And by Roman Reigns not defending it, you know, as often, Roman Reigns not appearing every single week on television, by pulling back on Roman Reigns and giving a little bit oomph for Seth Rollins, isn't that WWE's easier path to put a little bit of legitimacy behind his championship?
Yeah, they gotta build up Seth. I mean, there hasn't been a title on Raw in so long. And, you know, Seth is definitely the right guy. Despite that, I'm not his biggest fan. I recognize and acknowledge, no pun intended, that Seth is the guy to have the belt, even over AJ Styles. I mean, I was kind of split down the middle, but then thinking about it, Seth is 9 years younger. He's, you know, AJ was out for a while. Seth carried the ball when they needed him to many a time in this company. They went to the right guy. And a lot of fresh matches now. Seth versus Gunther at some point. Seth versus Damian Priest. There's a lot of nice matchups that are fresh that we can see. So they got the right guy. But, yeah, they got to establish Seth as a – Seth can be that defending champion on TV. Because people would say, oh, it's a secondary title. Of course it is. Look who's the fucking main champion. Anybody who got that belt was going to be a secondary title. Reigns has beaten everybody else. Yeah. So it's – you know, that's just by default. That's just the way it is. But Seth can make it a prestigious title by maybe having title defenses on Raw every now – not every fucking week. And honestly, DT, do you want to see Seth every week?
No.
On Raw? I don't.
No, not at all. I mean, because it gets played out. I mean, I don't want to compare him to Orange Cassidy. I think Orange Cassidy's having a great run with his international championship in AEW. But, you know, some people are getting a little bit tired, like, you know, AEW Dynamite every 2-3 weeks opens up with him defending the championship. Like, he is the favorite one to be on TV almost every single week. Seth Rollins, you got to keep him fresh. I mean, Roman Reigns, I look at his reign over, and you and I were talking about this also. You know, Brock Lesnar, 2017. You know, Brock Lesnar in 2017 had a run of 504 days as champion. And in those 504 days, he defended the championship a total of 7 times. That is once every 2.5 months. Roman Reigns, over the last 504 days, has defended that championship 30 times.
Right.
Which is right on the level of what Savage used to do, what Hogan used to do. It is nowhere near what Brock Lesnar did in 17. But yep. Seth Rollins being on TV every single week, I don't expect him to defend that championship every week. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't defend that championship more than once every month to a month and a half.
Right.
It's just the perception that he is there to work every single week. He's on TV every single week. He's wrestling almost every single week. But so is the Judgment Day, and so is Finn Balor, and so are others. So we don't have an issue. Kev, are you sick of seeing Damian Priest wrestle every week?
No, not with him. But when you're the champion, and again, we always go back to wrestling history, which is important. I hate that modern people make like, oh, yeah, that was then, this is now. You can say that about a lot of things, but certain time-honored traditions still stand. And this is professional wrestling. It can only evolve so much. I mean, it is a performance. This is not real.
Right.
So, you know, this like a TV, it's like someone saying, you know, TV show, you know, they have to have actual sex on network TV. They have to evolve. No, they don't. That's why they have cable. Yeah. So, you know, there's certain things that still have to be the way they have to be. Yeah. You can make it better, or you could repeat history, or just change it and put your new spin on it. But I like the fact that if Reigns was on TV every week, people would be far more sick of him now. than they ever would be. You have to make it prestigious. We talked about it off the air before we started recording. Hogan would appear on Superstars and challenge back in the day for many years just for interviews.
Yes.
That was it. He didn't wrestle. He maybe got jumped on Piper's Pit every now and then. But other than that, he didn't wrestle. And Ric Flair, when he would appear on TBS on the Crockett Show, he'd come out in a suit, cut his promo with the horsemen around him, do his thing, and take a car service out of town. He didn't wrestle. Again, unless Ricky Morton jumped him and he went in the ring and got his suit torn off him. So this has been going on for years, DT. People are acting like, I can't believe Reigns is not on TV every year. What kind of champion is that? If you know anything about wrestling, he's a regular champion. Because this has been going on for years.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to get their fucking head out of the Attitude Era, which was a 4 years and a moment of time that's never coming back again. We saw Austin every week. That's not happening anymore.
And that might be the reason why all of these premium live events over the last year and a half have all not only sold out, but they are booking like stadiums. You know, they're not booking just 10,000 seat arenas anymore for premium live events. They're booking 40,000, 50,000, 60,000, 30,000. And they're selling, and in some cases, they're selling in almost record time without announcing a match.
Yeah, it's because they know everyone's going to make an appearance on it. It's a special thing. Just like, you know, and listen, it's not, we said it's a performance. We know it's a work. But if you're going to compare it and call it sports entertainment, then make it like sports. Just like, you know, I was talking about before, you talk about Mariano bringing him in the game. It's you know, the big game, here comes our big guy, the guy that'll lock it all down. There have to be special moments and stuff like that. So, again, I'm watching these people go, well, next week, Reigns won't be on TV, I bet. He shouldn't be. Why should he be? We won't see him for a month. Good.
Yeah. I have absence no problem makes with the heart that. Grow fonder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see and listen, DT, you got to admit, the song, whoa, it's hot right now. You have that every week with him as the champion, it's going to fucking there's going to be a backlash to
exactly,
it, I guarantee
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I think what it is that people just need to have an overwhelming amount of positive emotion, you know, an overwhelming amount of feel-good moments, like everything. That's why, I mean, I'm going to have a little bit of a rant tomorrow, Wednesday Night Dynamite, and I don't want to just single out AEW, some of their radical fans, but, you know, one of the reasons why I enjoyed NXT Battleground more than I did AEW Double or Nothing is because I felt like the people in the ring, you know, were scraping and clawing and going for it. They really just want to show, like, you know what, I deserve to be in a bigger and better place. And I'm not saying that, you know, people in AEW aren't doing that, but AEW, it's more of like, okay, I want to go to like a mega event where there's all these celebrities and stars. Sometimes you do want to see the off-Broadway. You want to see the people who are really putting in 300% with their work, and then the crowds as well. You know, the crowds get truly into a lot of what they see. You see online, the perception of things is so different. You see online that, oh, AJ Styles is on Raw. Oh, what the fuck? Vince can't fucking help himself. But meanwhile, you look at the crowd live and the people around you, like, oh, shit, that's cool. AJ Styles is going to team up with Seth Rollins on Raw. That's pretty fucking cool. You know, you watch AEW, the live crowd is not reacting to a lot unless it's blood, guts, and, you know, just crazy, crazy, crazy-ass shit. If everybody uses a chair shot, nobody uses a chair shot. If everybody is bleeding, nobody is bleeding. But the thing online that really gets me is that after every, you know, premium live event, you know, for WWE, you know, you usually hear the complaining more than anything else. When it comes to an AEW event, you hear more of the, oh, that was the greatest of all time. This is the most amazing battle royal I've ever seen. This is the greatest this or that. This was the most unbelievable this. It's always it feels almost like an insecurity. You know, so I watch Seth Rollins taking on AJ Styles in Saudi Arabia. AJ Styles is on the latter part of his career. I want to see AJ Styles have one more run as the World Heavyweight Championship. But not because it's going to give me that overwhelming amount of warmth inside my heart. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to see him go for it. I want to see him work his ass off. I want to see him turn it up a notch. If you remember, and a lot of people don't know this, you know, when AJ Styles first went to WWE, might even be before he went to WWE, you and I felt he would never make it in WWE. His promo skills sucked. This was and he actually talked about you and I in an interview. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do actually.
When AJ Styles talked about this podcast and these two guys saying that, you know, I don't, you know, have it in me and this and that, that I can't, and you know,
oh,
I'm
God,
not
yes,
saying
I do remember that. What year was that?
That
God,
was, it's got to be like 9 years ago.
Wow,
it's about
Jeez,
9 years
I
ago.
I almost forgot about that, but yeah, now I do remember that
8-9 years ago. But the thing is that when he went to WWE, I'm sure he was not thinking in the back of his mind, I got to shut up the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show. No, he just, you know, had it in him like, you know what? I'm not settling. And I'm going to fucking give 300%. And he turned, I mean, his promo skills when he first came in were nowhere near the level of what they are now. AJ Styles is still one of those, you know, those wrestlers who has toned down his game, but mm-hmm. can still put in a reliable performance. And the idea of reading and hearing people complain that AJ Styles wrestled on a Raw because of a draft, it's like this guy, the 2 days before, just fought to possibly become world heavyweight champion, and I would rather not see him on my TV because a draft took place. I don't understand that logic. I don't understand that logic, but I also felt that this was a little bit of a rub as well. AJ Styles, because we know that their history goes back many, many years before either one was in WWE.
Right.
And I thought that they put on a really good performance in Saudi Arabia. Is this going to be a match that I'm going to remember 5 years from now? Probably not. But they put on a solid match, and if anybody was going to be defeated by Seth Rollins to win this, AJ Styles has got to be at the top of that list. I mean, who would have you put? Would you have rather put a Raw wrestler in there instead, maybe a Finn Balor or a Damian Priest for him to become the World Heavyweight Champion, or are you satisfied that he beat AJ Styles?
No, I think because we talk about, and the WWE seems to be big on annals of history now, and you know, looking back in years from now, how did this title come to be and who faced off for it? No, I think they needed those two top in-ring guys who were believable, credibility, deserving it. AJ Styles and Seth, like you said, DT, we might not remember it, but when we look back, say, a year or two from now, we're like, and you know, that world title that started out, if you remember, Seth Rollins was the original winner of that belt. He fought AJ Styles. And people would be like, oh, yeah, that was a pretty good match. It's not bad. And Saudi, it won't be, right, it won't be Steamboat Savage, but it's definitely two top-notch guys, and there's credibility there of the two guys who vied for that title. It wouldn't have had, if Miz was in it, it wouldn't have had credibility.
Right. Well, another match that went down at Night of Champions was the only match that we pretty much, you know, didn't nail. I think mainly because we didn't see, you know, this person, we didn't expect this person to appear. But Trish Stratus defeating Becky Lynch due to help from Zoe Stark. Now, I didn't talk about this yesterday. I was shocked, Kev, that people did not jump all over it just as a reason to rip Becky Lynch. Did you see the picture online of Becky Lynch with blood all over her face following Night of Champions?
Someone posted something. I wasn't sure what it was. I did see it, but I didn't get all caught up in it. Why, is there some controversy?
I wonder if someone in the chat room will post. Actually, you know what? I do have it from my synopsis, my thumbnail from yesterday. The reason why I'm bringing it up is because Zoe Stark hit the Z360 to Becky Lynch, and this is the picture there.
Oh, okay, there it is.
And if you enlarge it, I mean, I'm shocked that people did not jump all over that. And the reason why I say that is because we remember the man was technically born when Nia Jax busted her open inadvertently. And she had, you know, her arms extended and the blood coming from her nose. And everybody thought that, you know, wow, you know, tough son of a bitch. She roughed it out and the man was born. This picture looks like Zoe Stark nailed her in the nose. She got a little bit of a busted nose and she decided, let me smear it all over my face to make myself look like I was. And I cannot believe, because there was a lot of criticism about the Trish Becky feud going into Saudi Arabia. I included. I just felt that roles should have been reversed. I felt Trish Stratus should have been the baby face. Becky Lynch is better as a heel. But I thought they put on a decent match in Saudi Arabia. Trish did a lot more than I expected her to do, but in the end, it's overshadowed because Zoe Stark, hiding under the ring, gets involved, and now Trish might end up being the manager of Zoe Stark for the immediate future. What did you think about all this that went down in Saudi Arabia, especially with Zoe Stark getting involved?
I wasn't very enthusiastic about the match at first. As a matter of fact, I remember watching the pay-per-view and I had to make a couple of calls. I'm like, should I do it now? This is probably not going to be very good. So I sat there. I'm like, nah, you know what? I'll watch it. I'll take a break during the Natty Rhea match, which turned out like to be only a minute. But I didn't get much done then either. So I sat there and I watched it, paid attention to it. And it was not a bad match. It was good. It made up for kind of the lackluster buildup that they had with that in-ring or the contract signing, which they never go well, contract signings. Most of them are a complete disaster. So I'm like, yeah, they can make it up here by having a banger of a match. And I thought the match was good. I thought Trish was a little bit better. There was one missed move when Trish went up for that, you know, turns upside down and tried to get her with the scissor with the legs. Yes. So, you know, okay, you know, again, Trish is in her mid-40s. You know, she's not going to be on pinpoint precision. She never was an in-ring, you know, AJ's version of AJ Styles, female version. But she's good enough. And then when I saw Zoe Stark come out, I'm like, wow, what's this all about? And I totally getting Shayna Baszler vibes from Zoe Stark,
yes,
by the way.
Yes,
right? Absolutely. With the leather jacket and the posturing and the look on her face and the badass strut. Very Shayna Baszler-ish. I buy Zoe Stark as more of a tough girl than Shayna Baszler. Even though I understand Shayna has MMA and Zoe Stark's more of a character, I buy Zoe Stark as more of a threat right now, maybe because she's fresh.
Yeah,
and then Shayna Baszler's kind of been here forever. So then, you know, when they came out, I'm like, okay, is this just Trish Hyder is a hired gun? And then, you know, the sheet riders are going crazy. No, this is going to be a team up now. They're going to be a little faction together. And now I'm seeing today that Trish Stratus will be on TV indefinitely, weekly. It's being reported that she's going to be on weekly. And see people complaining about that, taking a spot away from one of the younger. What? Who? Aaliyah? Who's she taking a spot away from? But you know, taking a spot away like it's like anybody else is going to do anything. But I like Zoe Stark. I liked the team up. The match was good. I liked the Zoe Stark thing. I think she can learn from Trish. A little rough last night with the in ring promo, and then Zoe fell when she gave Becky her move. She stumbled a little bit. She's maybe got to slow down a little bit, DT. She looks a little bit too hyped. Yeah, a lot of adrenaline. She looks a little hyped.
I brought this up yesterday. I think that they may be leading to Trish and Zoe Stark versus Lita and Becky Lynch. I don't know
I think so. SummerSlam. Yeah,
I don't know about Money in the Bank. I think SummerSlam might be the better place to do it. Mm-hmm. But that's where I feel this is going. But, you know, I don't know, Kev. Maybe it's because Trish Stratus has been on social media. Like, she for years, she's been on social media. We know what she does in her personal life. Everybody loves her. Everybody has nothing but good things to say about her. She has no controversy. She stays out of political stuff. So it's like,
married our high school sweetheart, still together 25 years. I mean, we got nothing on it. She teaches yoga. I mean, what is? But for some reason, DT, someone in the back said, turn her heel.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what that's all about. It's not working, in my opinion.
It's hard to look at her with a straight. I kind of said this the other day. You know, you look at her, like you look at some wrestlers, and you feel like what you hear or what you see is an extension of what they really are. I look at Trish Stratus, and I see someone playing a character that is a heel. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel that her persona right now is an extension of herself. You know what I mean? Because there's too many years since, you know, the even they brought up the barking incident with Vince McMahon.
There's 20-something years ago. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's been so many years. Like, I look at Trish and I'm like, nah, I can't buy into her doing this heel thing. Maybe putting the focus on Zoe Stark is the answer. I don't know. But all I know is that, you know, Trish had a decent match in Saudi Arabia. Zoe being thrown right into the fire. If you really think about it, Zoe Stark's being thrown into the fire with Trish Stratus, Becky Lynch, and possibly Lita. That's a
lot. Why do you think they didn't turn? Why do you think this role didn't go to Lita, DT? Because she's caught up in doing the A&E show, and they got her on doing other things, or they didn't think Lita could. I mean, remember, Lita was the most hated woman in wrestling when she was with Edge in a work and a shoot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But Trish, even when Trish was doing that, Trish was playing a role. Like, she's on Dallas and playing, like, the other woman.
Yes.
Right?
DT, yes.
That's what it's like. Like, she's like Linda Evans, like, the bad, the other woman. Where Lita, like, was like that, they called Lita every name in the book for a year. She couldn't even, like, walk out of the building. So why couldn't they bring Lita back to that bad girl? Turn on Becky. I don't understand why Trish got the role. Why? Maybe there's a story to that of why Lita wasn't turned bad. Yeah,
maybe it's just health. I mean, Lita. I always felt, I mean, when everybody was saying Trish versus Becky at SummerSlam, I was saying Trish versus Becky and Saudi Arabia. Because last year, Lita got the payday. And I think people don't understand how much money is involved. I mean, I'm not saying that Trish got $1 million, but she got enough money that she did probably a year or 2 years worth of pay one night. You know what I mean? So she, she was going to get that Saudi payday. For Trish, you know, this might be her last run. I think with Lita last year. Lita, she put on a decent performance in Saudi Arabia, but I think that just totally wiped her out. Because I remember social media last year, and I remember social media telling her, oh, I hope you stick around, you know, at least for a few months into the summer. And she was responding saying, like, well, that's up to WWE. But they never, ever developed. And I always felt that it didn't develop because maybe Lita physically just can't do it anymore.
You know, maybe, yeah. You might be right, yeah.
You know, Trish is in unbelievable shape. Trish has had injuries in the past, but I don't think Trish has had the neck, you know, like those other issues that, like Lita. I think Lita's issues from a neck injuries, I think those are lifelong.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not. Right, man. Yeah, I just think she doesn't have it in her anymore. But can you know, I think another reason why they didn't put Lita in that position is because I don't think they wanted to remind fans when Lita used the last time she was a major heel and they start looking up live sex celebrations with Edge.
That's true. Well, again, that would have been some good fuel for Becky, you know, to insult Lita.
My God.
You know? Oh my God, can you imagine? You got fucked right here in the ring.
You know what, like, I would have done? If I was Becky, you know what I would have done with the contract sign if Lita was the heel? When they do the contract sign in the ring, instead of having a table, like Becky Lynch has a bed laid out. I figured this would make you feel a little bit more at home. You
know? Oh, my God. You're used to looking at the lights on your back. Like, there would have been some good stuff said that. Because me and you talked about it last week that I think on a lot of younger fans that woof woof completely fell on deaf ears.
Well,
I told you, a young podcaster said to me, I don't get it. What is she calling Trish a dog? I'm like, no, you don't know that. It's like, oh, yeah, I looked it up. That's what I'm saying. That just didn't get over with a lot of people, It was over 20 years ago.
Yeah. That's why, you know, I think we could segue to Brock Lesnar versus Cody Rhodes. Yeah, I brought this up yesterday a little bit on Monday's recap after Raw. You know, what I'm noticing about Cody Rhodes and everything with Brock Lesnar, now Cody's wearing the cast, and you immediately think about the story of Dusty Rhodes with the cast and putting it in the closet, and then young little Cody as a kid finds the cast and this and that. I think the weird dynamic that I'm seeing online right now is a lot of young fans that don't know the Dusty Rhodes era, that doesn't know, you know, why they're going back in time and taking a lot from Dusty and the Horsemen for Cody Rhodes. I feel like online, the vibe is that if they don't know the history, instead of trying to learn it, try to understand it. And maybe along the way, you get to see some moments in wrestling history you never saw before that you would say, wow, that's pretty fucking cool. Instead, there is anger. Like, because old guys like you and me and a lot of people tuning in, since we know that, oh, that's, you know, he's doing Dusty here and, oh, you know, Cody, when we talked about this match, you and I both agreed, Cody Rhodes losing due to referee stoppage, will not quit, will not tap out, and then that leads to match number three because Brock is not going to be satisfied with a referee stoppage, just like Brock was not satisfied with a wrestling move pinning him. And I see the next day people complaining, angry, you know, saying, you know, like, oh, the thing that got me the angriest, I don't know if you saw this, but, you know, Chris Statlander beat Jade Cargill for the women's championship in AEW. And the cute thing to say right now is, oh, look at that. Chris Statlander finished her story and Cody didn't.
That's stupid.
And I'm saying to myself, that is
not even in the same league.
Yeah. It's like, how are you comparing Cody Rhodes trying to, you know, dethrone someone who's had the championship for 3 years, you know, biggest star in wrestling, you know, right now, making the most money, drawing the most money, and you're comparing that to Jade Cargill. With all due respect, that's not fair to Jade. That's not fair to Chris. That's not fair to anybody.
No, it's a stupid, it's a ridiculous comparison. That's like someone saying, you know, the Brooklyn Cyclones finished their story, but the Mets didn't. It's like, what? It's completely two different levels. I mean, it's not even just a female-male thing. It's like, I love people comparing people who don't even remotely compare to Roman Reigns in any sense of fashion. Jade Cargill is not a moneymaker for AEW. She's just their version of, you know, a different version, modern version of China. And they're just trying to be, and then they just decide, well, you know, it's over. We're going to give it to Statlander. So to me, it's a big nothing burger, as you used to say, DT. I didn't think much of it. Everyone's like, I can't believe Jade Cargill comes to it. I didn't even realize it, to be honest with you. Yeah. I didn't even realize it.
Let me ask you this. You know, I'm starting, you know, when we were having brainstorms and we were comparing Cody and the Bloodline to Ric Flair and the Horsemen and Dusty, you know, a while back, started thinking about, you know, this big conspiracy that is being done against Cody Rhodes. I don't think Triple H is involved in the conspiracy. I think just health-wise, I don't think Triple H could be that on-air authority heel character like he used to be. I think with everything going on also with this Endeavor deal, I think, you know, his role is backstage. But yesterday on Raw, there was a segment that happened. And I'm bringing it up because I think this ties into Cody Rhodes when we talk about Night of Champions. There was a segment on Raw yesterday where Matt Riddle was being interviewed. Matt Riddle is qualified for Money in the Bank ladder match. And, you know, Gunther shows up. And Gunther says to Matt Riddle that, you know, he's a joke, he's this and that, and he wishes him luck. He wants Matt Riddle to cash in for his title. And, you know, like, Gunther was really insulting Matt Riddle to the point where you almost feel like Matt Riddle, that he's going to cash in. If he wins it, he's going to cash in against Gunther. And then I started thinking to myself last night, is this going to lead to a major conspiracy storyline? And I'll tell you why I say that. A while back, you and I talked about how we may find out down the line, like, we were never told why Brock Lesnar attacked Cody Rhodes. And you and I talked about the idea that later on it's going to be revealed that Paul Heyman made a secret deal with Brock Lesnar to try to take out Cody Rhodes, and Paul Heyman was doing it to protect Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is probably not aware of what Paul Heyman his deal with Brock Lesnar. I think down the line, I think that's why Brock Lesnar is a free agent. So Brock Lesnar could show up on SmackDown on a future episode and, you know, wants to cash in or whatever deal that he gave, you know, he made with Paul. Remember a while back, Paul Heyman shook the hand of Gunther. And I was thinking last night, wouldn't that be something that all of the people that Paul Heyman is afraid that you know, like Cody Rhodes can dethrone Roman Reigns, that Paul Heyman is afraid that Matt Riddle could dethrone Roman Reigns, that anybody who Paul Heyman deems a threat, he made deals with. And I'm wondering if Gunther provoking Matt Riddle is part of the deal that Gunther made with Paul Heyman to try to bait Matt Riddle to not go for Roman Reigns' championship if he wins Money in the Bank. You see where I'm going with this? That yeah. I almost feel like Cody Rhodes, the ultimate finish of this storyline is that a controversy is revealed. Remember, WWE hired somebody, I don't remember the name of the job title, but it was someone who was supposed to do research and try to connect the dots. And it was supposed to be more of, you know, storyline oriented, where you keep, you know, you show a clip from a year ago. Holy shit, I forgot about that. Or, oh, they didn't see this. Oh, wow. And I have a feeling all these things get tied together down the line. And when the conspiracy is revealed and there's nowhere else for Roman Reigns to hide, I think that's where Cody Rhodes gets Roman Reigns. So now I ask you this. If down the line it is Cody to beat Roman, even if it's WrestleMania 40, looking back, do you think it was the right way to go to have Cody lose at WrestleMania 39 and have this diversion with Brock Lesnar for probably about 3-4 months?
Yeah, I think so, because I think it was more about also, as much as they're preparing for the future with Cody Rhodes, they want Roman Reigns to cement that 1,000 days, which is now he has, and he's going to surpass Pedro Morales, and I think he's going to surpass Bruno's second title reign, because yes. Bruno is listed there twice. I don't think he's going to beat Backlund's, but Reigns will be, you know, top 4 out of 5, and that's no one will ever get there again. Not as long as in our lifetime, DT.
No, I don't think so.
And you know, so I think they're both important, but again, you know, Reigns is not some guy who's 45. You know, Reigns is not even 40. So I mean, Reigns is not that much older than, I think Reigns is, how old is Reigns? 38. So I think it's about just you know, preserving Reigns while, you know, protecting Cody, but giving Cody some of these obstacles where people can look back and go, God, they threw everything in the can. At first, I thought Cody had an easy ride of it, but then they did a 180 with that story, and they got Brock Lesnar jumping them. They got conspiracies now. They got Triple H, who you can't trust. So now maybe this was the whole thing. Maybe this is part of the, more part of the story. Finish the story. I think the story continues until it finishes when it finishes. And I believe, DT, that because this correlates, Reigns will be champion until next WrestleMania, and I still believe that Cody will, and I think Reigns will be caught up, by the way, with defenses against his cousins and stuff like that. There'll be an in-house feud between the bloodline, and that'll take up a lot of Roman's time for the next few months, and then I think Cody comes all the way back around, and then next year, whether he wins the Royal Rumble again or whatever, but it all plays into each other. But I think to make it really difficult for Cody, so as they see it in the fans' eyes, you know, I was thinking Cody was falling off, but nah, man. I mean, he was just in the shit for the longest, like getting jumped every week and broken arm, and then it's conspiracy, and then Triple H, and Paul Heyman is doing stuff. I think when it's all said and done, we're going to say, wow, Cody really had a long way to the title, but in the end, he got it. You know what I mean? Where other people are like, it's too late. It's the shine is off Cody Rhodes. Tell that to the live crowd, the live crowd reactions and the T-shirt sales. Him and LWO is still number 1 and 2 in merchandise sales. So I don't think he's cooled off, DT. Listen, the year goes by real quick. Me and you know that.
Yeah.
You know, it goes by real quick.
In June.
I know. We're already in June. Exactly. I'll be 55 on Saturday. I mean, it goes
by. Happy birthday.
Yeah, this come June 3rd is my birthday. And it's just like, and I remember, you probably remember too, my 50th birthday, 5 years. It's like 5 fucking years already. Yeah. So it's unbelievable. So I can wait. Everyone's like, oh, my God, Reigns till next WrestleMania. Guys, it'll be here before you know it. Trust me.
Yeah, you got to look at it like this. the road to WrestleMania starts in January because you have Royal Rumble, and then that begins the road to WrestleMania. So if Cody ends up going after Roman at WrestleMania 40, the seeds might be set in January. And then for the next couple of months, there is your build to WrestleMania 40. Even if you start, you know, that final chapter of that storyline in February, that is still only about 6-7 months away. That's not that far away.
It's not that far away. And again, everyone wants instant gratification today. That's the problem. And I think they're like, oh, remember this. Just let it play out. And I know people hate that. Let it play out. Oh, every time I let it play out, I get disappointed. Oh, not necessarily. I mean, there was some good things that have happened recently. Look what happened with Bad Bunny in Puerto Rico. There's a lot of good matches. There's a lot of epic moments that are happening on every pay-per-view. Matter of fact, I saw a majority, and we're going to continue to get into it, majority of people gave Saudi show, a lot of our fellow podcasters, big and small, all gave it a great review.
Yeah.
So clearly, the shows aren't worse now.
No.
So, I mean, the shows are going better. I mean, by the way, talking about that match, and just to not get, like, too much into it, but I thought the match itself was fine. I knew we talked about it, the possibility of Cody passing out a la Steve Austin, and they had to call the match, and so Cody can keep his I didn't quit. I didn't say I quit.
Yeah.
They stopped it. They stopped it for my the greater good. And that's how you keep Cody protected. I don't see how anybody sees it differently. You know, every opinions vary, but I think Cody is fine, DT. I don't think he's ruined. I don't think so.
I think what's happening now is I think we're starting to see a clear difference between AEW programming and WWE programming. And I'll tell you this stark difference that is starting to emerge. I think what's happening with we all know with AEW, it's about the now. It's about the now. If something feels hot, you go with it, period. You know, even if, you know, the future, I mean, you look at Jay Cargill's run. You know, they needed, put it this way, the run created Jay Cargill. Jay Cargill didn't create the run. Like when Goldberg was having his undefeated streak in the 90s, Goldberg was an enigma in the ring and was just this larger-than-life presence that you didn't even know what you were witnessing, but you just know that this motherfucker was not going to lose anytime soon. And his first loss was through, you know, Scott Hall shocking him. It's like the stupidest way for him to lose his first match.
He lost to a cattle prod.
Right.
It's like, how great was that? How creative was that?
Yeah, Jade Cargill wasn't this big, unstoppable force in the women's division that, oh, she can't lose a match anytime soon. But you felt like the reason why she didn't lose a match is because they needed her to have this streak to put legitimacy behind her. And to me, it's kind of ass backwards when you think about it. Look, I give Jade Cargill all the credit in the world because that is not easy to do from a brand new company from a few years ago and to hold this for 400 or 500 days, whatever it was. But here's the thing. I think what's happening now with WWE, and it's been happening because of the COVID era. I think the COVID era put this mindset with WWE that, you know what, you know, we're not going to just pull the trigger because it's the hot thing to do, because it's the, you know, the now. No, we're going to milk it. Even if we feel, I think they may be going back to the times where they're planning 6 months down the line, 9 months down the line. This is what we intend to do. Not like, you know, a lot of people learned about superstar Billy Graham and how Vince McMahon Sr. told him that on this date, you're losing to Bob Backlund. And a year before, Billy Graham's like, I'm going to show Vince Sr. that he's, you know, I'm doing so good, there's no way he'll take the title off of me. And Vince Sr. took it off him anyway. I think with WWE, they are intentionally now pulling back and trying to resist the moment, like the current moment. Like Drew McIntyre, we all thought, a lot of us thought, he was winning a Clash at the Castle. He didn't. I think the better example is the Street Profits at SummerSlam. Street Profits at SummerSlam had the most unbelievable momentum. They just had almost a 5-star match with the Usos, the premium live event prior. They had the almost perfect build. And if there was ever a time to dethrone the Usos. It was the Street Profits at SummerSlam. A lot of people out there, they don't feel that emotion now because we're almost a year removed from it. But at that time, people were like, how the fuck did you not get... Now you look at it, you're like, oh, okay. No matter how hot the Street Profits were going to end up being around summer of last year, the bigger picture is Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And I think they're doing this now with Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, no matter, like, resist. Now, even if there's this noise online that Cody's starting to lose popularity and, you know, sets the bigger baby face than Cody, resist. Look at Sami Zayn. I don't think WWE ever envisioned Sami Zayn to be as over as he was going into Montreal. But instead of having that feel-good, amazing moment in Montreal by having Sami win the championship, they're like, okay, then what do we do a month from now? You're like...
Sure, yeah, I know, you're right. I mean,
As weird as this sounds, Kev, you know who Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens remind me of as a team?
And Strike Force.
What?
Strike Force.
No. I think this might surprise you. They remind me, and physique-wise, it's very similar, too. It's almost creepy. They remind me of Terry Funk and Mick Foley.
Really?
They remind me a little bit of Terry Funk of Mick Foley, and the reason why I say that, and the funny thing is Sami Zayn might be a combination of both of those guys, is because, you know, Sami Zayn has become this beloved, you know, a little bit soft, you know, body-wise, like, Sami Zayn is like a combination of both. I mean, I think Kevin Owens is more of the risk-taker, you know, the bumps that he takes is kind of like Mick Foley. I think that both of them are a combination of the two. But the thing with Sami is, you know, they knew all along, you know what, no matter how over this guy gets in Montreal, we're not going to have that Mankind, yo, you know, Adrian, I did it. And then a week later, you're like, all right, now what do we do with Mick Foley?
Right.
And Mick Foley did not have the championship all that long.
And no, he didn't. A couple months.
Yeah, it's almost like Dusty. Back in the day, Dusty, he would win the championship, and then he'd be like, okay, now what? And then he'd lose it. Like, one time he lost it 14 days later, I think. One time he lost it 2 months later. Like, he never had a long run. So I think WWE is going very old school. I think they are going back to the days that, you know what, you know, for some championships, yeah, let's play hot potato. Some championships need to play hot potato because the people behind those titles are unfortunately not over to the point where they could just keep it on them for an extended period of time. I think that's why the women's tag team championships, there's a lot of hot potatoing going on.
Yeah.
But Rhea Ripley... Look, they resisted Zelina Vega in Puerto Rico. If there was ever a time to take it off of Rhea Ripley, that was Puerto Rico, and they didn't do it. Natty, yeah, the weirdos online, oh, I could do that to Natty on her birthday. Oh, Ali should have won the championship against Gunther. Like, they're resisting. They're going very old school. So getting back to Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes, the match at Saudi Arabia, to me, told an awesome story.
Yes, and that's what I thought it was.
A ton of Dusty with this as well. And I think the reason why Cody Rhodes told Roman Reigns months ago, listen, if you know, I'm fine with never bringing up Dusty again. I think, you know, WWE and Cody Rhodes want us to forget about the Dusty Rhodes storylines because they don't want it to seem too obvious. But this is going to lead now to Brock, Cody 3.
Mm-hmm.
You think there's any chance whatsoever that Cody Rhodes loses the third?
No, and I thought that there had to be a rubber match. I mean, again, people were complaining about it online, and you know, if I'm friendly with somebody, I'll make like a retort comment, but I don't go on strangers' pages to debate anybody who doesn't. You know, it's no point of that. But you know, like I said, some friends of ours or whatever, I have some friendly back and forth. And what I was saying to some of these young guys, like, God, you guys would have hated the NWA back in the 84, 85. Magnum TA wrestled Nikita Koloff every week. You know what I'm saying? You ever hear of Best of Seven? Yeah. Tully Blanchard and Dusty Rhodes had a feud that lasted a year and a half. They wrestled on every, forget pay-per-view, they wrestled almost every special event, Bunkhouse, Stampede. So people are like, another match again? I'm like, these feuds, they have to, because the rubber match means they're both top guys. They split one apiece. Now, this is it. This culminates the feud. I don't understand. What is this rush? Everyone is so, like I said before, has this need for instant gratification more than ever. And it's even the older guys who are not part of Gen Z. If anything, their millennials are on the cusp of Generation X, like we are, yeah. Between, you know, 40 and 55. And they act like another match. I'm like, back in the day, there was the Freebirds and Von Erichs wrestled a full year program. Yeah. So it's like, oh, that was then. It still holds water in today's day and age, because it's about getting people over, telling a story. You win one, we win one. Now the rubber match. This is it. This is for all the marbles. That's been the story. Rocky didn't win the first match. He came back and won the second one with Apollo. But then in Rocky III again, he lost again to Clubber Lang and had to come back and fight him again. What is this thing where people don't know storytelling, or they think they know the story? The story is supposed to go very quickly, and that's not the way it's supposed to be.
I think it's similar how Tony Khan hires talent. And what I mean by that is Tony Khan, if somebody's available and they have worth and he likes them, he'll sign them. And then it's like, you know, like the little kid that has too many toys in his room. And then you have so many toys, you don't know what to do with them. When I was saying earlier about the COVID era, the WWE, I think, changed course. WWE realized we only need a half a dozen toys. We don't need 30 toys anymore. So it's like, okay, you know, people are fine to have a different opponent for Orange Cassidy every single week, or a different opponent for this person every single week. Like, and you and I were chuckling before we went live. Macho Man's WWF championship run, I think it's his last run, 95% of his run was against two wrestlers, Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase.
Yep.
I mean, he fought, I think, a conquistador one time, and he fought One Man Gang on a Saturday night's main event, but 95% of his matches were against Andre and Ted DiBiase, no one else.
Yep, a full year. Two opponents.
So I think what WWE is realizing now, because COVID, I think, forced it, we don't need 200 wrestlers. We could get away with 25, put them out there every single week. Let's pay the 25, you know, top money, instead of let's paying 60, you know, and having 10 top money and everyone else like kind of like getting a piece of the pie. I think that's what WWE is doing much different than AEW now. I think they're trying to give us, you know, more with less, like less wrestlers. That's why even now, Night of Champions, 7 matches. We don't have 12, 13, 14 matches.
No, you don't need it. And I like that it's shorter now. It's almost like with baseball, like where they had to put this pitch count clock and they're shortening. Even tonight's Mets game, I think it was like two and a half hours.
Yeah, I don't like
it. They beat the Phillies. That's another story. But I like that they're shortening things up. And I think that they have to shorten things up again because people's attention is just not there. And it's not just because they got to put their eyes to a phone. That's part of it. You know, but just today's day and age, it's this instant gratification. I think it's almost, I'm surprised it hasn't really seeped itself into relationships where people are like, I want more. You know, we just got married. I'm just not feeling it. We just got married last week. You know, so it's like, you know, I thought I'd get more in the last 7 days. Like, it's a little much. I mean, people, I was just saying it before, so as always talk about, people got to slow down a little bit. I think they'll save it a flavor a lot more and enjoy it a lot more. I think people are not allowing themselves to enjoy, or maybe DT, you think it's like infectious sometimes, like the negativity online, you know, and it's like, well, such and such said, and he's my favorite podcaster, and he said that it's not good, so I agree with him. I'm like, free your mind and think for yourself. I mean, I've never gone, but me and you, I don't think even since day one, marched to the beat of anybody's drum but ourselves. And listen, we're not trying to convince everyone's got to think like us, but I think just take a step back, stop talking so much, and just think about, you know, so everyone's fingers are burning to tell us why we're wrong. And it's like, you know, and that's not going to happen because, again, first of all, opinions vary. It's select. But I also think, again, the instant gratification thing, I think, is just seeping itself into every aspect. And it ruins the product for people. But they still watch anyway, so it's kind of interesting.
The good storylines is what prolongs wrestlers' careers also, because yeah. when you're doing a really intriguing storylines, the person doesn't have to wrestle every week in order to be over.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And the instant gratification, you nailed it, because if you look at that also, you know, we don't want a year-long story. You know, we just want every feel-good moment. Like, if this is a feel-good moment, give it to us now. Give it to
like
why?
You, like you just said about Natty, right? Like, why couldn't she win? It was her birthday.
Yeah, they could have had to lose it 2 days later on Raw. And then, yeah, but just let's have the moment so we could keep replaying it. And like, oh, look. You know, I think people would, you know, like, we don't have DVDs anymore where they could, like, create alternate endings. You know, like, everything has got to have, like, an epic, amazing, feel-good, you know, moment to close it out. And WWE is doing these really... And listen, I think we all agree that some of the storylines might go a little bit too long. Like, if Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn did not win the tag belts at WrestleMania, I think that would have just went downhill since.
Yeah.
But now... Getting back to Night of Champions, the final match of the night, and looking back on it, I agree with it. You know, because we had no idea how the end was going to end. I originally thought they go off the air, Seth Rollins, hands up in the air, maybe mutual respect from AJ Styles, all the fireworks go off, it's a championship, this and that, but no. Instead, we get Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa. And for a majority of the match, it felt like a good SmackDown match until the Usos showed up. And then we get the next major chapter in the dismantling of the bloodline, the implosion of the bloodline. You know, you and I predicted everything correct on this show with the exception of the Trish-Becky Lynch match. We had no idea Zoe Stark was going to get involved, but... Uso show
I thought, up. I thought Lita was going to get involved.
Yeah, I thought Lita was going to be there too. Absolutely. Yeah. I think now looking back on it, if Trish is going to stick around for a little while being a manager of Zoe, you know, I kind of understand why Lita wasn't there. You save her. I mean, Lita's definitely coming back. I mean, if they're going to keep Trish around for a little while, Lita is absolutely coming back. But the Uso show up and Roman Reigns does exactly what you and I talked about. You know, like, I didn't ask for your help. Get out of my ring. I don't need you here. I don't want you here. You know, we're taking care of business. And he starts pie-facing. You know, Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso, fucking fed up with it, nails a super kick to Roman Reigns. And Jimmy Uso has this look on his face like he opened up the fucking hotel room and Trinity is fucking with someone else. In the bedroom, like the look on his face, and Jay looking like, what the fuck did you just do?
Yeah, it's interesting the way they flipped it. Yeah.
It's almost like the scene in Goodfellas when they had the what was it, Billy Bats in the trunk, and they just fucking killed him, and Ray Liotta's looking at Joe Pesci like, what the fuck did you just do?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry for, you know, dirty in your floor. Like, Jey Uso was just shocked. Then Jimmy Uso, you know, and this just leads to some major shit, Kev. Because now, if it bleeds over that Sami Zayn was right. Sami Zayn was trying to get to the Usos that Roman is drunk on power. That Roman is only about himself. So now, Jimmy... super kicks Roman Reigns. Jay is confused. You know, like you almost look like Jay wants a smile, but he doesn't. And he's like, what are you doing? This is family. And Jimmy's like, I'm doing what should have been done a long time ago. And he fucking kicks him again. The only thing I wish we would have had, Kev, I wish we would have had a close up on Kevin Owens' face or Sami Zayn's face laughing. smiling.
Like, yeah, they should have cut to the look on their face, like almost like when Sammy has that kind of mouth open, like like kind of almost like it looks like a Muppet.
Look like a Muppet.
But it's fun. But what I, you know, what I then on Friday, I think, is kind of must see SmackDown now, because obviously they didn't do anything on Raw with this. They're going to save for SmackDown. And what I think is going to happen, what comes of this, you're right, it was a good SmackDown match. It wasn't anything of like a classic. Like you said, we might not even look back and see it. What we will remember is the ending of the match of Roman pie facing them, Jimmy being fed up. I'm thinking that what happens is that Reigns has to show everybody that he is the tribal chief, where he, I think that there's going to be some sort of foursome. I think he feuds within the group. I don't think they full-fledged break up, but I think Sika and Afa get involved. I think Rikishi gets involved. That's why he was posting enough.
Yeah,
of this.
Rikishi wants to get involved so bad.
The celebration's supposed to be this Friday. I mean, we might as well get into it because, it, like I said, there's a correlation there. That the whole Samoan dynasty shows up, and they're like, this is how we settle this for real head-of-the-table dominancy. You know, the three-way, or maybe in a four-way, and Solo says, I want in on this too. And maybe they have a fatal four-way at SummerSlam between the four guys of the bloodline, and Reigns wins, because I do think he's going to be champion, and I do believe him, Cody, will finish this thing next WrestleMania. And in the meantime, I think they fight from within in the bloodline for grand supremacy, where Jimmy, even the elders get brought in. They say, listen, you want to challenge your cousin or whatever, settle in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, don't you think so, DT? Can you see a series of matches going on between these guys?
I almost feel like, you know, the way that WWE's really milking some of this, Money in the Bank is not for another month. So I could picture them for the next week or two leaving confusion. And I think we may see on SmackDown that Jey Uso is caught in the middle. Like, he doesn't know if he should take the side of Roman or if he should take the side of his brother Jimmy. And I almost feel like Roman Reigns may almost kind of give an ultimatum for Jey. Like, whose side are you on? And I think Jay's going to look at both of them. And I think Jay's going to turn around and just walk out of the ring. Kind of like what happened not too long ago. You remember when I think Jimmy Uso was in the ring? I think he was defending the tag titles against Braun Strowman and Ricochet. And wasn't it Jey Uso who was in the rafters? Like, he showed up? That Jimmy was trying to get in touch with his brother and Jey finally shows up. It's almost like a repeat of that. I almost feel that Jey's going to be caught in the middle, not knowing which side to take. I honestly think that Roman and Solo are going to take on the Usos. I think that tag match.
I think you're right. But I'm saying for somewhere down the road, I think there's going to be a singles match, though.
Oh, yeah, Reigns, sure.
Jimmy or whatever. And no, because he even said, you know, in one of the promos, I whooped you when I was a kid. I'll whoop you now.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and then, you know, Roman's going to say, you know, you kicked me from behind, you know, when I was that. Like, you know, how they're going to play this, you know, where Roman's going to be like, you know, face me, you know, face to face. You kicked me from the side. So they can go in so many different ways. And listen, Solo wound up getting pinned, losing the match. So Solo can harbor some ill will towards his two brothers for causing them to take
them.
Causing Solo to take a very rare pin.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, everyone's like, Solo's going to turn on Roman. I'm like, I think Solo's going to see it as I had an opportunity to wear some gold and you fucking guys fucked it up for me. And I had to fucking, and I wound up getting beat, you know, because you guys jumped in and no one asked you to jump in. I see Solo sticking with Reigns. I don't see Solo turning on Reigns.
Could you see a possibility of Roman Reigns wanting to have a match against Jimmy Uso and Jey Uso is forced to be the special guest referee?
That's a possibility too. They can go so many ways with this, and it'll eat up several months. So that's why we were saying before, DT said, it'll go by so quickly. It'll be like, you know, Survivor Series before you know it. And then they can circle back around. Cody can do what he does and Roman can do what he does. He's got a wrecked bloodline right now, and he's got to either reassemble it or destroy it himself and show complete dominance. And that's going to take a few pay-per-views.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this leaves one more match, and as we've been doing for almost 20 years, you know, off and on, you know, we don't do things in match order. We do it wherever the conversation takes us. But this is something else that is going to happen on SmackDown this Friday. It's definitely something that's going to be addressed. It's going to be really interesting how they address it. But we had Asuka do what a lot of people did not think was going to happen. And if people go back to our predictions, you know, we were rooting for Asuka to beat Bianca Belair. And by the way, with the predictions contest, congrats to Rams fan. He won it. He actually won it with the tiebreaker. And here's a little tidbit for everybody out there. Nobody in the predictions contest predicted Asuka to win.
Wow.
Everybody, every single entry was for Bianca. Asuka defeats Bianca. They actually did it a little bit creative this time around. So Asuka would not be disqualified for spinning the mist in Bianca's face. Asuka, with the referee not looking, spits the mist in her hand.
No.
Now, Asuka's been telling people online in storyline that she's been putting hot pepper in the mist. She spits it in her hand and she rakes the eyes of Bianca. Bianca can't see. And this time around, Asuka, not just pinning Bianca after rubbing her eyes, she actually nailed her, knocked her unconscious, and then defeated her. Bianca Belair's reign ends, but ends is the longest reign of the modern era, because we got to get used to that phrase, because that is what WWE is going to keep using for the foreseeable future. We're going to have modern era records, modern era, modern era. We don't know when the modern era actually begins, what year, but it's the modern era. So Bianca's reign is in the record books, but now the question is, who is going to step up against Asuka next? They have not done the split with Bayley and Io Sky as of yet. So who do you think is going to be next in line to go up against Asuka for this championship? Or do you think we might end up getting Bianca and Asuka to continue, since Bianca gets, you should be entitled to a rematch?
I think Bianca will probably get it back, because I don't see anybody, you know, I think everyone wants to see Io Sky have something with Asuka. I mean, maybe that'll be down the road. Raquel, another one, even though they now got a team with Shotzi, we talked about it before, she might not exactly be ready for that singles run yet, but she's a future player.
Yeah.
There's nobody else. I mean, honestly, I think, Bianca, I know it might bother some people that there'll be another match with Asuka and Bianca. Yes, because they're two of the top girls, and there's not a lot of top women here. Isn't Charlotte off indefinitely for a while? I mean, who's going to come in and face Asuka? Maybe Charlotte if she comes back?
I think you might be on to some with Charlotte because, you know, Money in the Bank is in London. And it is a big... got like 50, 60,000 people, between 40 and 60,000 going. I think Charlotte Flair absolutely will be at Money in the Bank. I don't see her participating in a ladder match. Like, if she is going to return, she is going to challenge Asuka. I almost feel like you got to do Charlotte Flair and Asuka at Money in the Bank. Whether people like it or not, I think it's a little bit too early for Io Sky to be feuding with Asuka.
Yeah, and you can also see the promo. Charlotte, I've beaten you before. I've beaten you at WrestleMania. I can take that belt anytime.
Yep.
But Asuka, let's be clear, Asuka is a heel now, isn't she? She's still dancing, but she's a heel.
She's technically a heel, but...
technically.
If people out there don't... Listen, I don't tweet much on social media anymore because I know what's going to happen. If I start tweeting more often, I'm going to get back into my old habits and start calling people out and just getting into fights with people. I just rather just stay on the sidelines. But you got to follow Asuka's Twitter. Her social media is so fucking funny. And I don't know who is helping her with it, but she's doing satires. Like, we played one recently of her spoofing The Shining. Now she did one with her and Homer Simpson that is really fucking funny.
Yeah,
Asuka is hilarious on social media, and she will call out wise-ass people online. But technically, she is a heel. There's been a lot of talk online that Bianca and the Street Profits are going to be turning heel very, very soon. Do you see that happening? Because I honestly don't.
No, I don't see it happening. I agree with you. I don't see it.
No, I think Bianca will continue doing what she's doing. Maybe she gets put in the Money in the Bank ladder match at the end of the day, but I kind of agree with you. I almost feel like Charlotte Flair by default has to be that person to call out Asuka.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that was Night of Champions. And before we wrap up this portion, this weekend also we had NXT Battleground. And I thought NXT Battleground was phenomenal.
Me too.
I'm not, we're not going to get into, you know, every little detail. We're just going to basically talk for a few moments as far as, you know, what's next for some of these stars. We had NXT go off the air tonight, so there's been obviously some changes. I think the thing that's most important right now is there's a lot of news reports online that Battleground was a goodbye for several wrestlers on that roster. People were reporting that Ilya Dragunov is gone. That's not true. He will be on NXT next week. Right. People said that Bron Breakker is now gone from NXT. He's heavily advertised for the Great American Bash. The Creed brothers, they said they were done as of Battleground. They're going to be on NXT next week. But Wes Lee retaining the championship over Tyler Bate and Joe Gacy. Tyler Bate, to me, it's... I don't know. How do you feel about Tyler Bate? Because
I'm not a fan. I think he looks like a guy who just came out of the audience. What was he? Was he from Mustache Mountain? Wasn't he from that mustache band?
Yeah, I believe. I mean, he did one thing that I was very impressed. He picked up Joe Gacy and was doing an airplane spin. And while he was doing it, Wes Lee shows up. And he decides while he's doing the airplane spin to Joe Gacy, who is a big boy, he starts doing the Cesaro swing to Wes Lee at the same fucking time. But
Okay.
No, I was going to say Wes Lee retains, but what is it with Tyler Bate? Like, is he... Because I don't know. Like, they...
His in-ring style, the yellow and stuff. This is a sloppy indie wrestler. It just looks like he is not going to remotely get over. When you got guys like Cross and Bronson Reed who look great, trying to get over. This sloppy guy, are you kidding me? He looks like a homeless guy on a bench in Tompkins Square Park. I mean, really, he's going to get over? I mean, how? With what?
Yeah.
You know, with that horrible color ring gear, yellow.
Yeah,
I mean, just that stringy blonde hair. He's got hair like back in the 90s, like hockey player hair. It's just like just I look at this dude. I'm like, really, if this is what everyone's into, everyone's making a left here. I'm making a right. Yeah. It's like I'm this is not. And this has nothing to do with age. If I was 16, I wouldn't have thought this guy was cool in any sense of the word. Wes Lee, I think, is cool. I'm 55, and I think Wes Lee is cool.
Yeah. Wes Lee is main roster bound.
Yeah, that dude is cool, man.
Yeah, I would love to see his tag team partner. They re-sign him back, you know, because, I mean, listen, when he did the Hitler pose, yeah, it's awful, and it was very many years ago, and, you know, he has not only apologized, but you could tell that he really learned and did research and, you know, understood and educated himself why it was so awful what he did. But, you know, MSK was an awesome tag team.
But DT, Wes doesn't need him anymore, Cash anymore, Nash anymore.
Yeah,
he really doesn't need him. I mean, Nash, I know, is still dating Gigi Dolan because my friend saw them at a rock concert in Florida, same concert Cross was at where Pantera played. They're still dating. So he has a tie, and I'm sure he sees Wes often with dating Gigi and being down in NXT. But I think, and listen, we all felt bad, if you remember, for the longest time on all of our respective podcasts. We were like, oh, this poor guy, you know, like, what are they going to do with him? They should, you know, and boy, has he had a resurgence. Talk about last year at this time, and where he was a jobber last year at this time. And now, I mean, what a comeback. He's so talented, and he looks good. I think what I like about that dude is he can appeal to kids. He can appeal to girls. He can appeal to older guys because he's so... He's so precision too. He very rarely botches, and he does a lot of high risk shit.
Yeah, Wesley is he's.
I like that dude. I like him. I like him a lot. Yeah,
Joe Gacy. I know he's wearing the tights almost to force himself to drop more weight and everything. But I can't stand him just wearing tights.
I don't like. It's not a good look for him. Honestly, with the black pants and the shirt, he looked okay.
Yeah.
He looked all right. You know, he was a little chubby, but he wasn't. You didn't even know he was that. And now he's more revealing now that he was heavier than we thought he was. It was able to mask it with the black clothing. Yeah. I don't know why he's doing that. Maybe you're right, DT, it's psychological. Oh, I'll see myself on camera and I'll want to. I don't know if that is exactly the best thing for ring psychology. No. You know, then because he's going to over critique himself. And then what is he going to do? Go on thing and look at the comments where people are insulting him? I mean, you know, I don't understand how that's beneficial. Yeah. I don't see it.
Yeah, he's got to change his look. Noam Dar retains the Heritage Cup over Dragon Lee. I don't know what it is, Kev. Noam Dar, you know, I think back to Alicia Fox. And I'm going to say it, because I know there's a lot of people that are noticing it but don't have the balls to say it. Noam Dar has always circled himself around black people. Like, if you ever notice, like, he circled himself around Lash Legend and
Jakara. Who's part of that crew? It's Lash Legend. Who's the other two? I don't recognize
Jakara
them. Who's
Jackson, the other? I think it is. I don't remember her name. But Noam Dar, and I'm saying this with Akara nothing but, Jackson, you know, humor involved with it. I just look at Noam Dar, and every time I see him, like, he's around a whole bunch of blacks. And
what is his deal, though? What is his ethnicity?
I don't know, but if you even look at his hair, like, it almost looks, like I said, this is not meant to be, like, nasty in any way, shape, or form. I just get a kick out of it that Noam Dar, every time I see him, like, the people that he's aligned with are always, you know, dark-skinned. It's, you know, you see, even like I said,
I don't know a lot about him, though. I really don't know.
Earl Mensah is another person that, you know,
I don't know a lot about. Was he off TV for a while?
Yeah, he was off TV for a while. He was doing stuff overseas. And I'm just saying it'd be lighthearted because, you know, it just, I just noticed that he, every time he's aligned with someone, it's always somebody dark skinned. And I know they would never dare to put that as something, you know, storyline,
like a comic, like a racial thing. Yeah. Noam Dar hates white people.
Yeah. Gallus retaining the tag titles over the Creed brothers. I think we all kind of expected that. It's the right team has not come across yet to take it. And I don't want it to be Tony D and Stax. To me, there's no way you're going to tell me that Tony D'Angelo and Stax are better equipped to become tag champs other than the Creed brothers or other teams out there. To me, they're not nowhere near ready. Ilya Dragunov and Dijak.
Fantastic match.
Match of the year candidate. It got so uncomfortable. Ilya, how this guy screams and cries and writhes in pain. It's like you feel uncomfortable. Like you feel it. You feel his pain. And that guy's got a connection. I mean, I don't know, Kev. I think if Ilya came to the main roster and they started doing some of that shit on the main roster where somebody just beat the shit out, I don't even know if they would dare do that on the main roster. I think it would just probably make little kids way too uncomfortable.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He was one of the few who beat Walter, correct?
Yes, he beat Walter for the championship that time, the UK championship.
Right. When Walter was morphing into the guy he is today.
Yeah, he was morphing into Gunther.
Dragunov is Russian?
I believe he is Russian.
What is he,
Gunther
guys?
Gunther is Austrian. Dragunov.
What is Dragunov? I thought I heard him speaking Russian.
I'll tell you right now. He is Russian.
Oh, he's Russian? Okay.
Yeah, he is Russian. And he's from Moscow.
Oh, he's from Moscow.
Yeah, he legit is from Moscow. Yep.
And is that his real name?
His real name is Ilya Rukober. Rukober. I don't know how to pronounce it.
How old of a guy is he?
He's 29. He's going to be 30 in October.
He's young. Yeah, the fans seem to like him down there. My worry is, of course, there's always a issue with the main roster people connecting to the NXT people. You know, as you saw the other day, JD McDonagh came out and beat up Dolph Ziggler. And all you saw was kids at ringside saying, "Daddy, who's this guy with the really big head? Who's this guy with the big noggin?" I mean, he's got a huge head, Jay.
He's like an English bobblehead.
Yeah, he's like an English bobblehead. So there's always that concern. But Dragunov, you're right. I think you know what he can get over is that even though you said yourself, it's a little uncomfortable, but he'll be known as the guy who like screams and bellows in pain. That's what he'll get known as, like around the main roster. It's like, oh, that's the guy who oohs and ahs and is always dying when he's on the defense. Maybe that'll catch on. Maybe they'll see that he puts so much into the performance that people respect that, on the main roster,
The way his left forearm started swelling up, I thought his arm was broken. I'm blown up. No joke, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this. Ilya is quickly becoming my favorite wrestler in NXT.
I'd grown to like him. I'm still not sold on McDonough yet. He'll grow on me. But Tyler Bate is not going to grow on me, but Dragunov might grow on me. I like, even tonight they showed a little behind the scenes. He was on the phone, I guess one of his family members is speaking Russian. He's sitting on the bed, and they're like reflecting and looking out over. I don't know if he was actually in Moscow at the time. And I'm like, he's a little plainish looking, again, if he has these kind of things that he does that separates him in the ring from the way he acts and the oohs and ahs, maybe again that'll get people seeing what a passionate performer he is and they'll fall in love with him.
Are you surprised that WWE is not doing more with Dijak? I threw this up yesterday.
Talk about a forgotten guy. I almost forgot about that he's still here. And at first people were making fun, he's trying to be the Terminator with the jacket and the colored in Just for Men beard. I'm like, I like him better like this than he was Dominik Dijakovic and plain and clean shaven. I like him better this way. I think he's fine. And last night, that match he had the other day, 2 days ago, that should solidify people on that he's for real or that he's back and better than ever.
I would be fine with Ilya Dragunov and Dijak. Next week, Dijak comes out, sign of respect to Ilya, and they become a tag team. I would be fine with Ilya and Dijak. And you think of the names, like Dijak, it almost like they tried to make him look a little bit Russian also. I mean, if you look at the beard, he almost looks like a foreign guy that would have beat up like Rocky from back in the day. He just looks like an international, bad guy.
Yeah, he looks like a hitman, a little like what old Killer Cross used to be, kind of like a little bit of a hitman kind of thing. Like, you're not sure, like everyone said when they first saw him, Terminator. Well, a lot of people wear MC jackets besides Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1984.
Yeah.
But I think, Dijak, I like him better this way. I like Dijak. I don't like Dominik Dijak. Oh, that's a little too wordy for the mainstream roster. Yeah, you're right. T-Bar, listen. People can bounce back from bad gimmicks. We say it all the time. That's why everyone declares it's over for it's never over for anybody. People declared it was over for Roman Reigns 6 years ago, and look what happened. So I think Dijak could have a career resurgence. People will forget about the T-bar stuff. That gimmick that he did is so forgettable, DT. I don't even think people give a shit. It's like with Bray Wyatt when he was playing. What was the role he was before?
Husky Harris.
I was going to say Chubby Checker, but that's the guy who does the
Husky Harris.
That's the guy who does the twist. You can come back from anything. I love when people never live down T-Bar. Oh, nobody gives a shit. Come on.
Yeah.
Watch anybody in the chat who didn't see it. Watch his performance and tell me if you were on the fence about this guy that he couldn't come back. Tell me that after you watch that match.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think the fact that he had that horrible gimmick makes us appreciate what he's doing now even more. I agree. Appreciate, he's showing everyone that, I am a hell of a lot better than T-Bar, we'll see what happens with them. So that leaves us two matches and then we're done. Are you ready for Tiffy time? Because I tell you, I am happy for Tiffany Stratton.
Yeah, she's good.
I have said it repeatedly for a long time that Tiffany Stratton should have been considered for most improved wrestler of the year, or rookie of the year. Not saying that she could have won it, but she should have heavily been talked about, and a lot of people didn't. And she is much more than just, the moonsault and that's it. She is, she went, like you said the other day, she went from this blonde daddy's, prima donna little rich bitch girl to someone who truly wants it, and she's working her ass off. And I know I'm going one step ahead, but she defeated Lyra Valkyria to become the women's champion. Tonight on NXT, she comes out there, And Kev, as much as I have praised the fuck out of Tiffany Stratton for the last year, I have probably talked about Tiffany Stratton more than any podcaster out there. Tonight, I felt it was a major step backwards. All the insults that she was doing were flat. When she was like, oh, I would like to have the entire women's roster to come out. Oh, they don't want to come out. And, oh, you know, and then she starts mocking them. Oh, sorry, not sorry. Like, she, and not only that, if
it
anybody
was bad.
Goes.
I saw it. It was bad.
And I'm convinced there might have been cheat notes out there. Because if you go back and you watch her promo, like when they outline the ring with decorations, the side facing us, closer to us on the camera, was set up a little bit differently. And she kept looking down at one area. And when she started, touting like Charlotte and Bailey and I, it looked like she was reading. And she just, tonight I just thought was awful. How do you feel about Tiffany Stratton now as NXT Women's Champion? I honestly think, no, I don't think it should have happened yet. I think it should have been the, you know, the generation of Jade. I would have rather had Cora Jade win it, maybe even Roxanne Perez. I don't know what the fuck happened with Roxanne Perez.
Yeah, I did. I think you've soured on her a little bit. I don't know
what happened
why.
Since before WrestleMania.
I think it's the youth thing. I think people are just against a 21-year-old getting that much. I mean, is she 21? I think it's maybe a little bit too much too soon, and someone decided to slow down that train. She's got a lot more way to go. I mean, 2 years in Ring of Honor is not enough to put this girl at the spotlight of NXT. I had my doubts about Roxanne Perez being the heir to the Mandy Rose throne myself. I think you're right. The Cora Jade, a little bit older, but Cora Jade seems a little bit more seasoned, a little bit more mature, been in NXT longer than Roxanne Perez. But Tiffany, I think, was the right one to go with. But you're right. You know, after tonight seeing this, it reminded me of when DeSantos, you know, was declared he was going to be president, then did that, decided to do the Twitter thing with Elon Musk, and it just fell flat.
Yes.
Like, it's
yes.
just like dude, what you should have filled a stadium in Florida, like where you like reinvigorated that fucking state. Like, what was with the Twitter thing? Did someone tell you, no, this is what all the kids do now, Ron? And it flopped, and it might cost them being the president.
Yes.
Because it was all about that moment. And I think Tiffany, the match, the in-ring stuff she did, but tonight she came out and even DT, the crowd was kind of quiet. Like they were like, what happened to the fanfare 2 days ago? Boy, you know, the people maybe even say to themselves, oh, that she's kind of cringy on the mic. Like, are we going to really give her our love, guys? Like, should we take that back? Is this what we're going to get every week or in the ring? Does she need a manager? Get a Robert Stone or something to talk for her. Because I thought Tiffany could talk, but she just didn't have it tonight. Or DT were shitty things written for her and she wasn't able to overcome
it. That could be it too. I mean, I felt like I was watching Tiffany from a year ago.
Yes.
She just, I don't know what the fuck it was.
What happened? What the fuck? I felt bad for her, but did you see the girls at ringside? And you're ugly. Like, just like, I was just like, what are we doing here?
You know, it's funny. They, she's saying that, but meanwhile, the cameras, like, I don't know whose ass it was, but they did a shot tonight of somebody's ass. In fact, it's worthy for me to even like look up the picture right now. I'm just going to type in from tonight's NXT. Maybe somebody grabbed a screenshot of it, but I'll find it. But I just honestly, like, I have appreciated what Tiffany Stratton has done over the last year, and she has definitely showed that she has earned the opportunity. But now she's got it, and I'm saying to myself, I don't know if this was the right call, because whoever wins this Battle Royal next week, I'm thinking to myself, like, I looked at that entire ringside area and nobody stood out for me where I could see, especially, you know what it felt like tonight? It felt forced. It felt, instead of her just, you know, soaking it in and taking pride and, you know, enjoying the fact that she won, it's like, okay, let's force her, like, to put down the entire women's division so everybody wants a reason to kick her ass because there's a battle royal next week. And she's just laying remote, you know, like shot after shot after shot. Nothing clicked at all.
Well, DT, what she was trying to do is remind the fans that she's a heel.
Yes.
Don't share. Maybe Michaels or, you know, someone.
The best heels don't have to remind us, though.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, it's like MJF has mastered that give it, take it back, fool the fans, make fools of them, bring it in, put it out. Tiffany has not mastered that yet. So she has not been, she does not know how to manipulate the crowd yet in a wrestling way.
Yeah.
So she just I felt bad for her. It was almost like, oh God, what, someone do a run in or something? Like, this is. Somewhere, I mean, this is live. Could Michaels do something about this? Like, call an audible here. Again, I don't know if it was written for her or Michael said, hey, just go out there and, but be a heel. Don't, if they cheer you, insult the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, you're all ugly. I mean, come on. It's such a trope. It's and people in the chat are saying, well, what about Trish Stratus? Well, see, guys, don't do that. It's not about you don't go and say, well, this one's doing poorly, so this one. That's not, just like if someone doesn't get a hit, you go, well, the second batter in the lineup didn't get a hit. Why should the catcher get a hit? That's ridiculous. You have to hit it out of the park when you're given an opportunity. You don't fall back and go, well, this one failed, so I could fail and it's okay. It's not okay. You know, so she's given the NXT title. They obviously have faith in her and ring ability, and she is. I thought she was able to promo. I thought she could talk, and now I'm doubting that she is a good talker. Maybe I was mistaken. Was I thinking? Maybe I'm mistaking her for Carmelo's promos. I don't know.
I thought
that she was a good. I've seen her go back and forth. DT, is she more good in the back when she is talking with the announcer girl in the back and she's going back and forth with girls with someone mediating between the two of them?
Yeah, because...
Is she better that way and not on her own with a mic in the middle of the ring?
I think so. I mean, she's cut promos in the ring before, but it just... I don't know. Today just felt extremely forced. I mean, there's a night. Listen, I want to make this clear. You know, this is not a shot on Tiffany Stratton.
No, I think she's good talent.
She's worked her ass off. There's a nice video online of her showing a lot of emotion backstage with Shawn Michaels after Battleground. You know, she has worked her ass off over the last 12 months. I just felt like coming out of Battleground, they just took a major step backwards tonight. I just was not feeling it at all. And everything that she is like fixed over the last year, we kind of like forgot about it tonight. You know, I don't know. I mean, I look back on it and I almost feel like my original prediction, which was Cora Jade, I feel like she should have won it. I think Cora Jade should have been the one to become the women's champion. I think Cora Jade would have been a much better heel as a women's champion. She don't even need to insult the rest of the women's division. Just the way that she has acted over the last 12 months, all she got to do out there is say, next week there's a battle royal, and who's going to step up? And the entire roster would have a reason right then and there to want to beat her up. Today, you know, Tiffany Stratton is like, okay, let me insult this person. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry. And
yeah, and look what you're wearing. Like, it's just like, it's,
what are you wearing?
It's just not. Here's the thing. I think that what sucks, DT, and you know it, a lot of people didn't see this tonight because they're watching other things or whatever. Yeah. Tomorrow, people are going to put that clip all over Twitter and be like, here's your new champion. Oh, she shit the bed. Oh, my God, cringe. I could pick it tomorrow. I guarantee we see this promo all over social media and people.
And it's only one night, but still.
It's only one night. I got it. But you know what? But two nights ago, she was the belle of the ball.
Yes, yes. Well, that leaves one match from Battleground, and that's Carmelo Hayes retaining the NXT championship against Bron Breakker. Now, tonight, Baron Corbin showed up and is now going to be the next person in line for Carmelo Hayes, which I like. I like it very much. Yeah. I am relieved that they have not turned Trick Williams against Carmelo Hayes.
They shouldn't.
I don't want to see them broken up as a clique. They're awesome as a team. And Trick Williams, I think Trick Williams could become a bigger star than Carmelo Hayes on the main roster.
He might become a bigger star than Carmelo. He's not as good in the ring. He's a better talker.
Yes.
But he's not as good in the ring, but they both complement each other. Let them, matter of fact, keep them together so much that they go up to the main roster together. And maybe down the road, you got to do what you got to do. But I hope they don't break them up. But I got to say, I love fucking Bron Breakker as a heel. I love the wolf dog mask. Some people think it's cool. Some people think it's corny. I thought it was cool. And I think Bron changing the ring gear now, all black, growing the beard out. And it's ironic because him and Cora are living together, a couple in real life, and she's finding herself as a heel and he's finding himself as a heel. So, maybe down the road, they'll even let them reveal that they're a couple since they're both these kind of dirty heels now. But I love Ron Breakker as a heel, and he was great. That spear that he gave Carmelo Anthony, I mean, it's going to become one of the legend. Carmelo Anthony is a great talent. I think he reminds me of African-American version of AJ Styles, which is a high compliment. But Bron Breakker is a heel to me. Like, nah, Vince is going to make him big. I don't think so. I think, listen, he's a Steiner. He can go either way. He closed your eyes when he said, Boston sucks. You thought it was Scott Steiner saying that, right? Yeah. Sounded just like Scott. I mean, I like Carmelo Hayes. He's okay, but I'm more about Bron as this dirty heel. I love this character now. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Braun is going to be going to the main roster just yet. I asked myself, who could he possibly go at? I mean, wouldn't that be something if they put him on Raw and he goes at it with Seth Rollins, right away? I think that probably would be a mistake. I mean, unless we get, a lot of DQ finishes from there. But man, would you have any problem with Bron Breakker versus Carmelo Hayes one more time at Great American Bash, even though chances are that Bron Breakker would lose?
What, a third match, DT? That's ridiculous.
I know, but it would be third match in a row that he would lose.
That's true.
That's the thing, though. He has killed it in his role, and that's the reason why they didn't bring him to the main roster yet. They want him to
be more seasoned.
They not only want him to get comfortable being a heel, they want him to fucking kill it, and he is killing it right now. But I almost feel like Carmelo Hayes, he has been so good as a cocky heel. You know what I mean? Almost feel like Baron Corbin had to be his next feud because Carmelo Hayes is a cocky heel. And, him is a feel-good baby face. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Clearly he was the baby face because he was in his hometown.
Yeah, well, people were sick of Bron Breakker as the baby face. That's what it was. They were kind of sick of his reign as well.
They were sick of his reign, and I like that he got rid of that colorful stuff, and now he's wearing all black, and the wolf mask and the wolf head symbol has become part of his thing. And he's so fucking aggressive, and he's such a strong son of a bitch. And talk about young, he's only 26, DT. He's fucking young. They got a good 15 years with this guy if he stays healthy on top. So they have the future with this guy. I mean, yeah, Carmelo is a good I think he could be a good baby face too. I think, he has the baby face thing. But let's get him around in different areas and see if he's over as much as he was, obviously, in his hometown. I think he's yet to be tested, but let's be honest, DT, they brought Corbin in because everyone's going to boo the fuck out of Corbin and cheer Carmelo. So Carmelo's a forced baby face. He has no choice.
Absolutely.
Right now.
And Carmelo Hayes, you could take your time with. You could keep him around another year. I don't think that hurts him in any way, shape, or form. There is absolutely no reason to rush him to the main roster. But I think we could all agree with one thing as we close this out. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, there was a lot of uproar online about, WWE bringing NXT back to developmental. A lot of people felt that, they were ruining Triple H's legacy and his creation, this and that. I always thought, focusing on the stars of tomorrow is really what NXT, needed to do. I always felt that they took the eye off of that, what should have been, because NXT was on the same night as AEW. Them going back to what they're doing now, and that is developing Stars of Tomorrow. My God, you look from Carmelo Hayes to Bron Breakker to Trick Williams to Ilya to, and you look at the women's division with Tiffany Stratton and Cora Jade and down the line Roxanne Perez, and there's tons of names that we're not even talking about, the Creed brothers. There's so many people on the NXT roster right now that 5 years from now, probably going to be on the main.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I enjoyed Battleground, and, I hate to be forced to, pick one of the two, but I enjoyed Battleground more than I enjoyed AEW Double or Nothing.
I might tend to agree with you on that. I enjoyed both pay-per-views. I liked the way both the main event of both were very good. The highlight match, though, for me was Dragunov versus Dijak. And my God, if you would have asked me that a year ago, I'd be like, what? Dijak, Dragunov? I mean, like, really? But it, that's why you never say never with wrestlers. You never say, oh, this guy's done. He's never going to get over. He's a, anybody can turn it around. Everyone's one match away, the right match away from turning their career around. And I think Dijak did that. Dragunov was already on his way, but I think that was more important for Dijak to say, listen, you know, I was, you may have dismissed me for the last couple of years as T-Bar, but I'm still relevant. You know, and I'm still a viable guy, and I'm not going anywhere.
What was your favorite match and least favorite for Night of Champions, and your favorite and least favorite for Battleground?
Favorite match for Battleground was Braun and Carmelo.
Okay.
My least favorite match, I don't know if I have a least favorite match for probably the Noam Dar thing, because I'm not really feeling it at all.
I go with that.
And for the Night of Champion, I was just trying to say, Night of Champion, no S. I'm going to go. My favorite match was, I'll be honest with you, I'm going to go with Trish and Becky as my favorite
match.
Okay,
that's cool. That, I totally respect that. Absolutely.
I'm going to go with that. And my least favorite match, clearly, the 1 Minute Wonder, Natty and Rhea Ripley. And it wasn't much of a match, but I felt it was, that it didn't really need to happen.
Yeah, it's like I said, it was a match that they threw on 2 weeks before because they realized that Liv Morgan was not going to be able to defend, and they had
improvise,
to replace.
Yeah,
yeah, they weren't going to put Ronda Rousey just to have a squash match. But for me, for Battleground, my favorite match was Ilya versus Dijak. My least favorite match, honestly, I got to go with Tiffany Stratton versus Lyra Valkyria. I mean, it was a great match, but that just goes to show you that there really wasn't a bad match on that card. Noam Dar, I honestly, only because I really am digging Dragon Lee, but Noam Dar, Dragon Lee, I would probably put a close second. For me, for Night of Champions, my least favorite was, yes, Rhea Ripley and Natty. Even if it went 5 minutes, I would have still said the same thing. My most favorite match, I got to go with Cody versus Brock. Because I just love this story that it told. It's going to lead to a third match. It's going to be interesting to see what the stipulation ends up being. And I am really excited. If you and I picked up on this conspiracy idea with Paul Heyman making deals with Gunther, making deals with Brock, maybe he made a deal with Drew McIntyre when he returns. I don't know. I mean, if he ends up that they do this whole conspiracy storyline, man, it's going to be, if it's anywhere remotely as good as what we have seen so far, man, it's, we got some fun shit lined up for us in the near future.
I agree, man. And thank you, DT. Thanks,
yeah, thank
everybody,
you for coming
for
on.
I know you got more stuff to do, so.
Yeah, I
got to
get into some Q&A and stuff and some, you know, the usual Patreon duties.
Yeah, and I'll see everybody here on Patreon for Thursday with Trez, the annual KC pre-birthday celebration Thursday with
Trez.
Yes,
happy 55th. Oh, and by holy shit. Okay, you cannot leave yet. You cannot leave yet. I swear to God, I swear on my mother, this was not a lie. I've been searching for this picture the entire night. Well, the entire last 20 minutes. The picture popped up literally when you said goodnight. I don't know whose ass that was. But
nice
whoever's
one.
Ass that was, yeah, that's what I was saying. When she's making fun of saying everybody's ugly and the cameraman zooming in on that ass, I was like, okay, yeah.
Does anybody know who that is before I go? Who is
I got to go back and I got to. Oh, Lola Vice.
Oh, Lola Vice. Oh, there you go.
Okay, Lola Vice.
I love Lola Vice.
Yeah, so I thought that was funny. It was perfect timing because, you know, Tiffany was like, oh, sorry, not sorry. You're all ugly. And then they show the picture of that. So
excellent. Great way to leave off. Thank you.
All right. Happy 55th.
Right. Talk to you soon, man. Good night, everybody. Peace.
Take care. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show discussion on WWE Night of Champions, NXT Battleground. What went down on the May 30th, 2023 edition of NXT, this past Raw, this coming Friday SmackDown, Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, WrestleMania 40. I hope you enjoyed it all. However, if you are part of our Patreon family or you are a YouTube channel member, stay tuned because you have another hour or so bonus material. This show will magically continue with your DTVI Patreon episode. I will do that now. For everyone else, hey, if you want to sign up on Patreon, it's patreon.com/DonTony. This Thursday, Kev will be doing his birthday celebration episode with Trez that starts at 10:15 p.m. Eastern, I believe. And you can get it, patreon.com/DonTony. If you want to become a channel member on YouTube, youtube.com/DonTony. and you'll get all the bonus content. So appreciate it as always, everyone. Thank you as always for the support. Once again, if you are part of our Patreon family or YouTube channel member, stay tuned. You have another bonus show coming. For everyone else, I thank you as always for your support. Very much appreciated. I want to thank Kev Castle for joining me tonight. I will definitely do this again soon with Kev. We'll see what the topic of discussion will be next. And you all be well. Stay safe and all the best. Have a good one.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. 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 Yeah.